Welcome to the Patriot League's Pillar Citizen Spotlight. My name is Aaron Robertson, and I'm the president of the Patriot League. We're a nonpartisan public advocacy organization that seeks the common good of society through the advancement of America's founding principles, working together to promote traditional marriage, parental rights, religious liberty, and the humanity of the unborn, four pillars of moral truth that we believe are indispensable for our state and nation to survive and thrive. And we're joined today by Bishop John Brannan. And Bishop Brannan, we're looking forward to the conversation today, and thanks so much for joining us.
God bless you, my brother. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Bishop Brannan serves as pastor at Living Word Ministries International in Colorado Springs, Colorado, and we've come to know him as a leader within his community that believes strongly in the pillar principles. And we've invited him today to the spotlight just to talk with him and converse about these principles. And the statements that he makes are not intended to be an official statement of Living Word Ministries International or its affiliates, but reflect his sincerely held personal and religious beliefs. So with that, Bishop Brannan, we'd like to start off with, what is your primary motivation, sort of that catalyst for believing in and defending these principles?
Well, first of all, as the overseer of Living Word Ministries, anything that I say would speak for the ministry. Whether it's on my personal belief or not, unfortunately, it goes that way. Second of all, I believe wholeheartedly in those principles, those pillars, the principle of those pillars. Without them, you and I wouldn't be sitting here today. And I believe that trying to eradicate those things are going to bring our own extinction.
Yes, indeed. And we're seeing it all around us, I think.
Absolutely.
In our culture. So we understand that you're a member of the evangelical community.
Yes, I am.
And so that being said, why, in your interpretation, should your community, again, the evangelicals, not only just believe in these principles, sort of, we agree, but actually take that further step and advocate for them as well? Why should they do that?
Well, being an evangelical, people just hearing that sometimes causes their skin to crawl. Why, I don't know. But the evangelizing is just spreading the gospel, spreading the news. That's all we're doing. We're spreading the news. My particular forte is non-denominational because I don't believe in being divided.
Okay.
And when we aspire towards denominations, we divide ourselves.
Yes.
But I think that if evangelicals, if you want to use that context, who are gospel spreaders, who are news spreaders, don't spread the popularity of the good news as well as the soundness of good news, then bad news continues to thrive.
There you go.
And unfortunately, bad news has taken the forefront of everything.
And the gospel means good news.
Absolutely.
So to your point, it's the opposite of that would be bad news.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Do you believe it's can be a spiritual calling for someone in, whether it's your congregation or in the evangelical community, to hold public office? Or is that more or less a secular role in your view?
The Bible says many are called, but few are chosen. And I believe that there are some that are called to a public office, whether it's in the political realm or just as a leader within a community.
Yeah.
And even being an evangelical, it would literally be anti-Bible to not be a leader, to not stand up, to be a voice of the people. And so whether you use the Apostle Paul, who was a Benjamite and a Roman, he spoke with the voice of the people. But it was later, his name was changed from Saul to Paul, that he ended up doing things for what we preach now, two-thirds of the New Testament.
That's right.
And so it's necessary to be that.
Okay. So let's talk about some pushback that may come, right? From that, 'cause we know there's folks that are going to push back to that and say, hey, members of the religious community shouldn't concern themselves with advocating for these pillar principles, as we call them. And they're really, of course, these principles can be distilled to principles for families and unborn children, really, mm-hmm. when you get down to it. But we use this image of pillars. So they say, hey, this is a distraction, Bishop Brannan, to more important work. We grant that, yeah, sure, it's in the Bible, but aren't there more spiritual matters that we should be attending to?
So then my question to them would be, what do you say about the preachers who, after they took off their robe, they grabbed their rifle and the members grabbed the rifles with them and went out into battle?
Okay.
We have to stand up for what is right. The analogy is that tyranny thrives when good men do nothing.
Mm.
And so as a leader, it's impossible for me not to get involved in political things, because political things involve members. Mm. And as the members are sitting there in the congregation, they want to hear what we have to say about those political things that are going on, whether they like them or dislike them. And they want to know what the Bible has to say about them. And I think that's the crust of it. What does the Bible have to say concerning these things?
Yes.
And so if I don't understand the law, being the natural law and the spiritual law, then I'm one-sided as a leader.
All right. That's good. Okay, so kind of connected to that, now more pointed to you as the pastor.
Sure.
Someone says, okay, fine, but as a religious leader, you know, hey, you shouldn't be speaking about these issues. I know you kind of touched on it, but it's kind of sort of tantamount to getting involved in politics. Mm-hmm. So how would you just help us understand how you would, you have any other angle that you would address if they're talking about you specifically?
How does a person who is a leader in the community not get involved in politics? There are leaders of the community, and those leaders are going to be either council members, mayors, vice mayors.
Right.
So those individuals may attend church, may be very active in church. And some say, well, those are different hats. For me, I cannot take off my hat of my character.
Mm.
My character is supposed to be Christ-like. And if my character is Christ-like, how do I separate them? Jesus never separated himself from the people.
Mm.
He just brought truth to the people. And how do they hear the truth if we separate ourselves from them, thinking that we don't have a place among them? So for the members of the congregation who say, well, Pastor, I need you to just preach, my word to them is, I'm not just your pastor.
Mm.
I'm a pastor to the community. And every time we open up our mouths, we're preaching, whether it's in a teaching mannerisms or in an exaltation mannerism,
mm-hmm.
the words that come out of our mouth, as I said earlier, whether you say that these are my own personal views or Living Word Ministries, is going to be said. Living Word mm-hmm. Ministry says this because Bishop Brannon said it.
I appreciate you saying that.
Yes, sir.
Because we, you know, as you know, there's maybe a lot of folks that may want to make sure something like that's said. And that's mm-hmm. fine if that's their conviction. But mm-hmm. I'm just saying I appreciate your willingness to be upfront about that and say,
absolutely.
I'll stand by that in any context.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Again, I can't separate the hats.
Right. How do the pillar principles positively impact society as a whole? How would you, just in a very kind of simple form of that, you have maybe a simple form?
Simple
how you
form?
Could, well, if you want to go on a little,
analogy,
yeah.
Simple
yeah,
no, form?
However you want to
okay,
go.
Okay, here are my fingers, and let's say in between my fingers is the nucleus.
Okay.
And the nucleus is what keeps all of this together.
Okay.
So the family is the nucleus, and it is the nucleus of society. It is the nucleus of our nation. It is the nucleus of our defense.
Mm.
So if we tear out the family, what do we have left? So in order for us to operate as a nation, as a strong nation, as a people still with a voice within the world community, we need the fiber of the family. And those pillars are the glue that holds that together. And to extrapolate the glue from that gives us no reason to stay connected, which causes us to fall apart, and now these shatter.
That's good. I remember a couple years ago, you were at the Pillar Project event.
Yes, sir.
And you may or may not remember this, but you gave a quick interview, and at the end of the video, I appreciate it so much, you mm-hmm. said, if, and it was in reference to working together in unity for these principles.
Oh, yes, I remember
okay,
that.
Okay, and you said, if we can't come together on these principles,
mm-hmm.
I don't know what we can't come
what
together
can we
on, right?
Come together I mean, on, absolutely.
If you can't agree on this, these are foundational issues.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, so it's my understanding that a person's gender is viewed, at least by most within the evangelical community, as a gift and a design of one's creator. So if this isn't, in fact, the case, Bishop Brannon, how would you advise your community to interact with those individuals who may struggle to recognize their gender in that way, or they may be dealing with other similar issues? How would you advise on that?
I think the words that are renowned in that passage is struggle
okay.
with that. There's male and there's female. And if a male is struggling with being a male or a female struggling with being a female, we have to understand that there is a wanting need there of acceptance. And if the church can't accept people, then where can they go?
Mm.
The church is the place where everybody should be an ex.
To be what?
An ex.
Oh, an ex.
An ex-drug addict. An ex-homosexual,
oh.
An ex-prostitute,
gotcha.
An ex-drug addict, an ex-alcoholic. We should all be exes. Because if the hospital can't be the, if the church can't be the hospital that heals hurting and wounded people, then where can they go? It is the only facility, the only edifice that literally treats the wounded spirit.
Mm.
And a person that may be struggling with his or her gender has a spirit issue that's going on. And I know people don't like to hear that because people want to believe that now they're whole, now they're complete.
Mm-hmm.
You said that our gender is a gift from our Creator, so He created you whole.
That's right.
There may be some disconnects mentally, and I'm not saying that everyone that struggles with gender dysphoria has a mental issue. There are some issues that have caused gender dysphoria, but we have to understand that people want to be accepted.
Absolutely.
And as a pastor, it would not be fair of me as a representative of God to say you can't come in here because you are crossed or not sound in your gender.
Right.
I'm not here to treat your gender. I'm here to treat your soul.
Amen to that. And I was going to touch on, you would welcome these folks, assuming that it's not for the purpose of being disruptive, to the congregational meeting assembly. And I think you just answered the question. You're saying, yeah. We want to be, as you say, that community leader that wants to run to the problem instead of running from the problem.
Absolutely, because it's going to be here. And as we can see, it is continuously growing.
Yes. And, of course, it doesn't only affect the adults. Sadly, tragically, we have now, you know, the youth are being adult. The adults in our society, in the halls of educational institutions or whatever, academia, are pumping this stuff on children. I mean, it's just a tragedy.
It's all a part of the plan. It gets back to the gay manifesto that was published, and it's coming to fruition. And those, you know, I think that one of the things that hurts the church is that we are well-versed on the Bible, but we are very illiterate when it comes to things of the old ways of the world. And Paul says that I've learned to be all things with all men. So how can you do that if you ostracize yourself from everyone and everything that does not agree with you?
Right. And if there's problems in the community, as you were pointing out, I love how you talked about if you're a community leader, anything that's going on in the community should matter to a community leader.
Absolutely.
You don't get to pick and choose, well, you know, we're not going to get into that mess. That's way too, whatever, political or way too trouble or it doesn't fit within our plan. Well, then change your plan.
Absolutely.
Because it should be, there should be a whole life perspective.
It is almost as if, though, and it unfortunately is getting that way, a person runs into the emergency room and say, hey, I need to be treated. My arm has been severed. And they, and now we're getting to the point where the first question they ask is, who's your insurance carrier?
Yeah, right.
The church can't do that. The church cannot discriminate because we don't think you look like us, act like us.
That's right.
The church has to be willing to accept everyone. One of the things that I say is that I am demanded and commanded to love my enemy. So if I'm commanded to love my enemy, then what is the inference for those who are not my enemy?
Sure.
The problems that we have is that everyone wants to create this dynamic of division under the auspices of diversity.
Right.
And that's what's causing a problem for us. We are created on the outwardly different just to make us look that much more beautiful. But if you remove the skin, we're identical.
That's right.
And I think that these outward shells become more of a barrier than they do as an attractor. And I think that because we are the difference between appeasing and pleasing. We're getting it crossed. And society now is trying to appease everyone. And we're willing to literally pull back our own standards.
That's right.
Just to make everyone pleased.
And exactly.
And I can't do it.
You can't do that. Well, and you touched on the skin color and how we're the same. I love that because I appreciate how we can work together. You know what
yes,
I'm saying?
Sir. Yes,
as,
sir.
As, well, they say brothers from another mother.
Yes, sir.
You know?
Yes, sir.
And so we've known each other for years and just, are there differences in any ethnic groups? Of course there are. There's beautiful mm-hmm. expressions of distinction there. We don't need to pretend there's not. But our commonality and our humanity.
Absolutely.
And the things we have in common, it's a beautiful thing. And that's why it's so important to us to work with every group of society. If I was an African American, it would be incumbent upon me to reach out to the Caucasian folks mm-hmm. or the Hispanic mm-hmm. folks and vice versa. So we hope folks will understand that you've got to look out as the Pillar Citizen community and ask yourself, are you keeping yourself in your little cocoon or are you going to reach out? Because, sure, it's uncomfortable, right? If you're going to reach out. And I'm talking about the ethnic piece.
That's right. That's
and
right.
I'm sure you can speak to that a whole lot more
yes,
than
sir.
I can.
I feel it from a different perspective.
Exactly. And certainly feel free to share mm-hmm. it. I don't need to steal any of your thunder, but just speaking from my perspective, I mean, sure, there's going to be a level of awkwardness. Mm-hmm. But let's do the right thing. Mm-hmm. Let's love each other, as you're saying. And if we don't, not only is it the wrong thing, but there's no way we're going to be successful in
That's
defending
right.
our shared principles if we don't.
Absolutely. You know? Absolutely. It's interesting where we're going as a nation. It's even more interesting as for where we're going as a people. And unfortunately, it's even more interesting of where we're going as humanity. And I think that because we do not understand the necessary of the succinctness of all of that, we are literally willingly pulling that apart and saying, I don't need you because you're not from here. I don't need what you bring because you look different from me. Well, if that is true, and if we had the ability to take out a time eraser and erase all of the people that have done the phenomenal things that have made this nation what it is, this nation wouldn't be what it is.
Right.
So how dare we say, I don't need you, when without us, this wouldn't be. Everyone brings something, and we have to be willing to accept what they bring. It's kind of as if, though, you were to build a beef stew, but all you wanted was beef, then what kind of stew is it? If all you wanted was potatoes, then what kind of stew is it?
Yeah.
You have to accept the carrots. You have to accept the potatoes. You have to accept the celery, the beef. And I'm not trying to make nobody hungry.
Yeah.
You know. But you have to accept all of that in order to enjoy the stew.
Yes. It's good.
And we are trying to walk away from that and say that, no, you need to specifically be as I
right.
in order for you to matter.
Exactly. Thank you for that. Okay, if we can, let's talk for a bit about some real-world examples of laws that have been proposed this year for the state of Colorado by our elected state legislators. Mm-hmm. Some proposed, Bishop Brannon, that certain individuals whose birth certificates reflected their male gender or vice versa should be able to go to their county clerk and get a replacement birth certificate indicating a different gender as though it was the original. And in your view, should citizens whose gender is clearly identifiable at birth be able to obtain a government-issued birth certificate indicating a gender other than the gender, again, that was witnessed at or observed at birth?
Quick answer is no.
Okay. Next.
Absolutely not. Yeah. I believe it's unfair and it should be considered highly immoral that someone could present themselves on a government document as for what they're not. When we were born, a doctor named our gender. Today, they name it before you're born via ultrasound. So to come
Good
back
point.
Now and say, I was born this, is an outright lie, and you're getting the government to back that lie. Huh. And it is also unfair to the person you perpetuate that lie on. I remember seeing a show, it wasn't Maury Povich. It was long before him. It was in the Donahue area.
Okay.
Era.
Yeah.
And it was a female host. She had on there a member who wanted to tell the person he was dating that he was not a male.
Okay.
I mean, was not a female. Thank you. Was not a female.
Switching it up. Okay.
And the individual who was the recipient of that information picked up a chair and assaulted the individual.
On the show?
On the show. For lying to him.
Thanks.
Matter of fact, he said, I can't believe you've deceived me like this.
Yes.
So if I'm able to go down and change the gender on my birth certificate, I've deceived everyone that has accepted it.
Mm. And you said before, we're so focused in culture on appeasing people. That's a form of appeasement, is it not?
It is.
It's giving in to something. We all have desires, all of us, that aren't good for us or good for our community. Mm-hmm. So should we then essentially grant every one of our whims and desires just because we have it, or should we stop and question, is it a good desire?
It's going to sound
appropriate.
This is going to sound like an oxymoron, but that is controlled chaos.
Absolutely.
To do such a thing, we are creating chaos. Why can't I, on my next application, no matter what it is for, why can't I identify myself as a Caucasian male? And why can't I show up to the interview as a Caucasian male?
It's where you identify, right?
That's right, because I say, this is what I am, and I feel like I'm a Caucasian male, irregardless of what's showing on the outside.
Right.
I'm Caucasian. Then is it wrong for you to disagree with how I identify? If you say no, then there's no reason.
And isn't it becoming wrong now? Because now you can't call the person, to your point.
I just filled out a counseling application on a client, and it literally now questions how does a person genderly identify.
Genderly.
That's right. That was considered to be illegal at one point.
Hmm.
Now it's required, because if the abnormality that they're coming to see me about has anything to do with gender dysphoria, mm-hmm. I need to be able to refer back to the application, the intake form, on how that person identified.
Right.
So now we get back to my application. I identify as a male Caucasian. And then I show up, and I'm not that.
All right.
Did I lie?
Yes. You're asking me. So.
But I feel like I'm a male Caucasian. And as long as I feel that way, why won't you accept it?
So what dictates reality or your feelings, right? Mm-hmm. We have to pick one or the other.
Now you've just opened Pandora's box.
You've opened Pandora's box.
Because it is about feelings. It is not about reality.
Right.
And as long as we try to accept just the feelings, we're hurting everyone.
We're hurting everyone. And it makes me think, you know, we've interacted with several legislators over this session and mm-hmm. previous. And it really is disappointing. I understand the desire to be compassionate towards folks who are wanting to have their birth certificate changed. And I don't think we would want anyone to perceive the conversation here to be anything other than we have concern for every person that we discussed. But there's also truth, and there's also what's best.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have legislators, Bishop Brannon, several I can think of, who would support this bill,
mm-hmm.
okay? Because in their estimation, this is the compassionate thing to do. In other words, these folks are struggling, so let's accommodate them or appease them. They may not call it appeasement. But I think that word that you brought up in this conversation is exactly right. It's appeasement.
Mm-hmm.
And as you're pointing out, I mean, it's not helpful.
It's not.
It's misguided matter compassion.
Matter of fact, it's detrimental to that person's future. And the reason why I say that is I wore a uniform for 26 years.
Thank you and, for your service, by
thank
the way,
you,
sir.
Thank you. And it would have been very hard for me to lead being solely compassionate. Because how right. could I lead the service member into a conflict where he or she may not come back home if I'm just pushing with compassion? I have to fulfill the mission. And the mission of our legislators is to create laws for the people, most of the laws that we're seeing are for personal agendas. And you were not elected to push your personal agenda.
Right.
You were elected for the majority of the people. It is amazing to me, Brother Aaron, that 5%, it's probably about 7% right now, that 7% of 328 million are steering the majority.
That's unreal, isn't it?
And the reason why is because of the manifesto.
Okay.
They said that we will place people in the right positions to bring our agenda to fruition.
Can you give us, in your view, some practical steps? How do we, you're talking about this agenda, so a lot of people viewing this maybe say, well, so now what? If they have the agenda and it's succeeding, so now what do we do?
I think...
Simple question, right?
I think that one of the problems that we have is, why do we have laws? God gave us 10 commandments. Why was that not sufficient? 10. I mean, I can remember 10 easier than I can remember 10 miles mm-hmm. of laws. And the reason why we have laws is because people found a way around. And that's what we're doing now.
That's right.
We're trying to find ways around. So you might ask me this later, but I'm going to jump to it now. Mm-hmm. So what do we say to the mother whose children coming home on prom night are killed in a car accident mm-hmm. because the driver of the other car was high? There are people who need marijuana for medicinal purposes, and it's actually the THC. Mm-hmm. That is the literal chemical that they need. Mm-hmm. And we can extrapolate that, and they're now using it in oils that are done the correct way. Mm-hmm. But what do we say to that mother who lost her child coming home on prom night because the individual was high? Can we go back and sue the governor who wrote it into law that it was legal for this person to do that? Can we go back and can we sue the judges who did not criminalize the individual who was driving impaired? Right. Can we go back and sue all of the legislators who turned around and said, we're going to push this bill no matter what you want? Can we go back and sue all those people? I use the word sue because the only thing that people tend to recognize is things that affect their money.
That's right.
So that's why I use the word sue. So if the answer is we don't have anything that we can say to them, it means we've done something wrong. And now we don't want to take the proper steps to rectify that.
Okay.
We were wrong to legalize marijuana for recreational purposes. We were wrong. There's some that says, oh, it's no different than alcohol. Well, a child can't smoke alcohol. drink alcohol. There are reasons why there are age limits. The brain is not set cognitively yet to be able to handle the influence. Some of these laws that are being made up right now are so detrimental to our children's well-being that if you or I did it, we would be charged with contributing to the delinquency of a minor.
Yeah, absolutely.
We would be charged with abandonment. We would be charged for failing to do the proper thing to protect the child.
The obligation that the adult has to protect those weaker around.
Absolutely, absolutely. And now for the sake of pleasing people and or appeasing people, we are willing to put our children at risk, which means we're putting our future at risk.
That's right. And isn't appeasement usually sourced by fear in reality? It's often, I'm too afraid to stand up for what's right because at the moment I might be in the minority or I'm afraid of the response. I'm not saying that's always the motivation, but I believe a great source of much appeasement is often we're too afraid to just stand up, be counted, and say, this is where what I believe.
We don't want to deal with it.
Don't want to deal with it.
And the quickest way to not have to deal with it is to say, all right,
right.
Whatever.
It's just like a fussing, child, right? It's just instead of addressing the behavioral problem, instructing them about how the proper way to respond to frustrations in life, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, we'll just buy the thing for you if you'll just shut up. You know, so we get out of the store without looking like we're nutcases. And rather than taking the time to do the right thing, we just appease.
That's right. And 10 years later, you have a monster. You see, that's the whole reason why. Okay. Whew.
A real monster. it's pretty bad. A lot of examples.
I digress one moment. You mentioned about the laws that are being written that are literally coming at our children.
Yes.
It's part of a plan. Back to the fiber. If Satan can get them as a child, the fiber's already rupturing. If he can change their thought process as a child, change their cognitive thinking, he's won. So what reason can any adult justify by introducing illicit sexuality to a 9-year-old? How do you justify that?
And this is purely theoretical, right? You're talking about this isn't actually happening here. This is theoretical, right?
No, it's an actuality of, I almost call somebody a bad word. it is actually the actuality of people who have their own agenda, saying, I know how I can prevent someone else from going through the hurt I went through. I'll attack them young. So they'll grow up with acceptance without question. So I'm feeling the Spirit of the Lord now. Oh, my goodness. Who leads people expecting them to not question what doesn't feel right?
I deal with,
in the health community, I deal with trusted care, and there's this terminology called CUSS. And CUSS means to clarify, get a better understanding, stop. That's what it means. So we cuss it up.
Cuss it up, okay.
We cuss it up. We said, hey, wait a minute. I need to clarify something going on here. So let me clarify this. You believe it is necessary for my 9-year-old child to be exposed to the explicit acts of same sex. But you won't introduce them to the explicitness of heterosexual sexuality. I don't understand this here.
Right. And it's all, again, this adult obligation to protect our children.
Absolutely, absolutely.
How would you, even as our viewers are listening to you share, Pastor, how would you share, if you're willing to even speak directly to the camera and talk to our viewers, appealing to them from your heart, what would you appeal to them with reference to this whole aspect of protecting their children? What would you say to them in this culture and all that's coming at them? What would you say to them?
I would say, at all costs, love your child. If you love your child at all costs, you're going to protect your child. And your obligation as a parent, as the life giver to that child, is to protect them from unnecessary hurt or harm. If you as a parent did something to hurt or harm your child that society thought was wrong, you could be arrested. So how is it that society can do something that can hurt or harm your child and it be legal? You need to speak up. You need to speak to your child, qualify those questions that are in his or her mind about those things that they don't understand because they're not supposed to understand their children. And as the adult, it's your responsibility to love them. So that word love that I use is an acronym. You have to listen, you have to observe, you have to verify and encourage.
That's good.
That's what you have to do with your children. And then by doing so, they'll be a better citizen. That's what I would say to the parents.
Thank you very much for that.
Thank you.
And folks, we've got to defend our children, like the bishop said. We cannot surrender the most precious, the precious possession that we've been given in life, which is these beautiful children. We can't surrender them, and we can't appease people at their expense.
The harm is to do nothing because you feel powerless. And that is what the plan is. The plan is to make you powerless. so that you can't say anything. As a matter of fact, if you do say something, now you're breaking the law.
Well, it's like you're reading this thing, you're reading right in. If I can...
Go ahead.
Let me interject, because you're saying is exactly what I was going to ask. Concerning religious liberty, sir.
Okay.
So there was a bill last legislature in 2018 that would prohibit some members of the religious community, which is exactly what you were about to say, from providing certain counseling services. And I already know what your position is, but we still want to hear what you are going to say.
Oh, wow.
So if an individual pastor would come to you, they're under 18 years old, and they're struggling with unwanted same-gender attraction, again, parents are approving of the counseling, they come to you. Mm-hmm. This bill prohibits you, under penalty of law, from providing that counsel, and just to be clear here, if the counsel was words or deeds or actions that supported their desire to reduce the attraction. So if you did that, it would be a ban, and it doesn't matter if you were just conveying the traditional evangelical position. So talk to us, please.
Okay, so I'm sitting here literally with two hats. I am a pastor. I'm a religious / spiritual leader. And I am a counselor registered with the Department of Regulatory Agencies, DORA. That bill, if it had passed, would have denied me the opportunity for my pursuit of happiness. That's the first
thing. That's an interesting angle. I never thought of that perspective, actually.
So let me qualify that one real quick. My pursuit of happiness is that I desired to counsel. I desired to talk with people, to be take them through a therapeutic session that would make them better than when they came in.
Yes.
That's my pursuit of happiness. And then you take away my freedom of speech because you say now I can't talk to them. So you've taken away my pursuit of happiness, you've taken away my freedom of speech, and then you interfere with my religious liberties because as a pastor and a counselor, I can't talk to my parishioner because there's no separating of those two hats. I'm registered with DORA. So I am a clinical individual within the realms of psychotherapy. I am a pastor, and I am a licensed minister. How do you separate them?
Yeah, and I think you did a good job of just painting a picture of just how deep in your spirit and heart such an idea and a bill would affect and, frankly, attack.
Three areas
you
that are part of the Constitution. So we talk about separation of church and state, which is not in the Constitution, but those things that are in the Constitution, freedom of speech, pursuit of happiness, and freedom of religion. You've attacked all three in one bill.
Yeah. And we would just appeal to the religious leaders in our community to please stand up, because we can see, as you're sharing, just how bad it's gotten, and how
brother,
close we are.
It's even worse because I had to get a master's degree, so I incurred student debt to become a clinician.
Oh man, that's all another perspective, isn't it? Right there.
Oh, absolutely. And so I don't just have one master's; I have three masters. So each one of those masters operates within clinical services: psychology, marriage, family therapy, and then criminal justice counseling. Three masters.
Wow.
That's a huge financial debt.
Investment of your life, even not monetarily, just
time.
Time.
My family's time.
Yes.
When my wife would have wanted to be going to the movie or doing something else, I'm at the computer pounding away on papers. So everything that I went through to do, I'm hindered of being able to do it because someone's personal agenda says, we don't think that counselors should talk against this. Yeah. And anytime, watch this here, anytime we are challenged to change, it means that something's gonna come out of it. If there is no challenge, there is no change. And so if the challenge is to address what the concern or what the question, let me digress a second.
Sure.
if an individual came into me for counseling because they said that I have a sexual addiction, therapeutically, I can counsel them for their addiction. Mm-hmm. With that bill, if that individual was a minor with a sexual addiction, and their sexual addiction is towards same sex, I cannot counsel them.
Right.
See there?
Yeah.
So now here there's a person with a psychological need, cannot be helped. Now ethically, by the American Council for the American Counseling Association,
okay,
Code of Ethics, I violated the Code of Ethics.
Really?
Because now I can't treat a person who came to me in need.
And don't we see those conflictions, or I'm sure that's a word, but the conflicting sort of mentalities within the health institutions? We have health institutions that have declared certain things as unhealthy, such mm-hmm. as, let's say, homosexual behavior, and then we see those things getting changed, and now the positions on those behaviors or whatever change. So is it true that we are seeing some of these institutions almost contradicting themselves?
Absolutely.
As they try to adopt or appease those elements of society, we're seeing a lot of times those institutions, venerable, often in the past at least, conforming, and now there's almost contradiction as you're sharing.
Absolutely.
That's so interesting.
Absolutely.
I never knew that.
An individual is court-ordered to seek out anger management. And when they come to counseling for anger management, we find out that the underlying issue is they were molested. Or the underlying issue is there's a struggle going on inside of them because of this same-sex attraction. Mm-hmm. Or the anger is a result of them being rejected as a child. And as a result of that, they now just go into areas of promiscuity.
Right. Or the anger expresses, or however it is.
How do I now treat the court-ordered anger when, as a therapist, I'm required to find out, are there any other underlining diagnoses?
Wow. Man, that's huge. And everything you're describing, Bishop, this is reality.
It is.
Everything you said, you talked about, affected you in three ways. I forgot each one, but...
Freedom of speech,
okay.
Pursuit of happiness, and pursuit of my freedom of religion.
Freedom of religion. Mm-hmm. And that was just on the initial level. Then we talked about the financial implications. I mean, on and on and on.
Mm-hmm.
That's reality.
It is.
For you and, who knows, countless religious leaders in our state. And so we're going to, if we continue to appease, if we continue to just be silent, mm-hmm. we're going to basically accept a false reality, a false narrative, right?
Wow.
And mm-hmm. and what that does is it completely dismisses what actually is happening.
Absolutely. And if you dismiss the true reality and accept the false reality, you can get charged for malpractice.
Man, that's a serious implication. I don't think many people have thought through, honestly. And so your perspective in those trainings, I think, is really instructive.
Well, I did go up and testify against that bill. And it went through the House and went all the way to the Senate to get shut down. And it was amazing that it went through four times.
This was last session?
That's right.
Okay, last session.
Four times that bill went through. And you know what they said? We're coming back next year. Just imagine how much of the citizens' money.
Yeah, exactly.
Is being used up for that because a person is determined to get that bill through.
Exactly. Well, and I noticed this session, we noticed as an organization, as you were alluding to, they did bring it back. They tapered it down a little bit. In my reading of the bill, it does not specifically include, let's say, your class of the community as a religious leader.
It said that it won't interfere with religion, but you got to remember something. I'm a licensed minister. I'm a pastor. I have patrons. So if they come into the church and they say, Pastor, I need my child to speak to you.
Yes.
I cannot speak to their child. Their pastor can't speak to a sheep.
That's
the shepherd
terrible.
Can't handle a lamb
that's
because the shepherd has another hat.
Which keeps you fulfilling your calling.
That's right.
On your life.
That's right.
It's
Satan's plan. And you see, anytime you get into a tangled web of weaves like that, anytime you get tangled up like that, Satan is always involved in it. You see, the Bible says that God is not the author of confusion. Listen to how much confusion is just in that one bill.
Oh, my. Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I would remind people, too, that just because the bill was honed down or, cut down a little bit from being so bad.
The end state is the same.
Yeah. Do you want a cup that has 50 drops of arsenic or only 10? It's my understanding that they'll still both have the same result. So I would encourage people to recognize that you can't sit there and go, well, they improved it, let's not get crazy.
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
Fundamentally,
yeah.
It's going to end up in the same.
It's the same. I use the analogy of I love dessert. And I said, if we went to the Cheesecake Factory, and they don't have this kind of cheesecake, but it went to the Cheesecake Factory and there was a piece of cheesecake there that looks so good that your mouth watered just looking at it.
Big but pile the ingredients, of
but the ingredients said one scoop of poop.
Oh, gosh.
Would your mouth still water for it? Because it only had one scoop of poop. The Bible says a little leaven leavens the whole lump.
Mm.
And what they're doing here with this here, even in their desires to water it down, to let it seem less aggressive,
right.
The end state is the same. We are going to stop you from speaking against this.
Exactly. And let's get smarter, quicker, and realize the end game, the end plan, just because it's not, it's like a 5-stage plan, right? So just because it's stage 1 or 2 doesn't change the fact that's still the end game.
That's right, still the end state, absolutely.
Yeah. Right.
Absolutely.
Right. So it seems the cultural winds, as we know, are blowing strongly against those who believe in these principles. Mm. So do you believe there's a point at which we may just have to realize law, culture, it's gone too far, and just sort of accept that?
Brother Aaron, what I'm about to say now is going to be like swing, that golf swing that just truly knocks it all the way across.
Okay.
The Bible says... that we are to obey all ordinances of government. The Bible says that. And the Bible also says that we are to obey the law of the land. But the Bible also says that we're not supposed to accept or do those things that are against our God.
Right.
So that means that there has to be a time frame where the law of the land might come against the law of God.
Right.
So now your end state to be with God, to be a representative of Him. In clinical services, I tell clients, especially those that are struggling with some specific abnormalities, that there are 5 things in life that shape your character. And it's FFSSR.
Okay.
It's family, friends, society, schools, and religion.
Okay.
Those 5 things shape your character. If you go back and you look up Eric Erickson's psychosocial development, he talks about that there's 8 stages of human development, and in each one of those stages, there's a certain inference that mom has, dad has, mom and dad, and then society. When society gets involved, that's as you're going into preschool, child care,
right.
Head Start. As you're going into there, school and society becomes more paramount than mom and friends, dad and friends, because they spend more time in the school setting than they
time,
do
raw time.
In the family session.
Yes.
So that teacher is going to have a very loud voice, that coach, a very loud voice in the formation of that child.
Hmm.
That child will look up to them, that child will respect them, that child will even honor them in some cases. Oh. You have to take a position of leadership. You have to take a position of these people voted you in to look out for their welfare.
That's right.
Not to turn around and put them in positions where they can now lose their child because they told their child no.
Yes.
There is a fundamental difference between the rights of a parent and the privilege of serving in government. A parent has a right that no one can take from them because they're the ones that gave life to that
child.
Yeah,
they literally gave life. The government had nothing to do with it.
That's right, that's right. But the government is saying, but even though you gave them life, we're going to train them how to grow up in life.
Yes.
That's big government.
And I find it interesting, often, the same people who devalue human life and advocate for abortion, which is the taking of innocent life, mm-hmm. are the same people that want to tell us how to raise our children. Mm. I find that rather ironic.
It is. You're the mass murderer is going to criticize me because I'm not loving my child.
Right. It's kind of just a little disjointed there. I mean, yeah. I was also thinking when you were talking, don't we look back in history, Bishop Brannan, and admire those who suffered for what they believed in? Isn't that something that we always do, whether it's our own country, American founding, colonial days, or just throughout history? We always admire them for being willing to suffer for the truth. Isn't it true that if we want to live lives in this generation that are praiseworthy and noble, that we might live in a generation now, a time, where, as the Pillar Citizen community, we might have to be willing to suffer? Even, I don't know about you, I don't want to go to jail. Mm-hmm. I'm not advocating anybody goes to jail. Mm-hmm. But if it actually came down to having to stand up for these fundamental principles, mm-hmm. wouldn't we actually look at that and say, you're being the kind of hero that we look up to throughout the generations?
Well, you use the right term, hero. And that's why they are that. They were willing to do what the others weren't. So what differentiates in being a hero from that soldier that throws himself on a grenade to protect his squad versus that individual, Dr. Martin Luther King, who went to jail so many times because of standing up for civil liberties?
Yes.
And I was just so offended when I sit there and I see that the argument for same-sex things is being used for civil rights.
Yes.
I'm so offended with that because, Brother Aaron, as much as I love my skin, love the color of my skin and who I am, as much as I love it, I had no control in it. Mm-hmm. I was born it.
Right.
Darkest in my family.
Right.
I had no control over it versus you making a choice of what your sexual desire is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we've become too wrapped up in pornography.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, let me qualify that. I should have no need to know what's going on in your bedroom.
Right.
You're supposed to be here to do a job. What's going on in your bedroom should not be being advertised.
Why does this need to be on the front page of
Absolutely.
Every conversation?
You're here to do a job. You were hired for the ability to do the job, not for your sexual connotation.
Right.
And so that's what I mean when we focus more on the sexual aspect of things. Oh, I know, they say sex sells, I got it. But when we focus more on the sexuality of a thing than the thing, we've lost track of the thing.
Exactly.
26 years in the military, and I was very happy to know that I never had to worry about my daughter being drafted. Now she does. Hmm. Well, she's past the age, so you don't have to worry about
okay.
it. Thank God for that.
Sure.
But if I had a granddaughter, I served so she wouldn't have to. But now because of normalizing or equalizing playing field, they say, well, women can be in combat MOSs, so they might as well be called up in the draft.
Mm-hmm.
What father wants their daughter to go away to be blown apart? We have a hard enough time with our sons.
Right.
But now your daughter.
Right.
You're going, I'm not effective on the battlefield if I'm worried about the female soldier not being strong enough.
That's right.
Worried about the female soldier, she got shot. So now my sister got shot. My mother got shot. My wife got shot. My daughter got shot. Innately, I have to help her.
Yes.
Well, what the enemies do in theory of battle is they don't shoot to kill, they shoot to wound. And if I can get you distracted on the battlefield by trying to take care of another wounded one, I get you.
Hmm.
And we see it so many times where that was exactly what the mission of the sniper was.
Wow.
Wound one, and the others that go to save them, kill them.
Wow.
And this is what we're doing. We are putting ourselves in a dichotomy that is going to hurt us later. Well, other nations, we're not other nations.
Yes, and I hear, in my mind, as you already know, people complaining, well, Bishop Brandon, that's your gender stereotyping and so on and so forth. And what my heart wants to say when I hear you describe that so beautifully, that picture, right, of the love that you would have as a man to sacrifice for someone weaker than you, mm-hmm. physically,
that's right?
And whether it's your daughter or a woman, and people say, well, that's gender stereotyping. I didn't hear you say, I certainly am not saying that a woman can't get a job or do a whole lot of incredible things. I happen to believe that men, we're not necessarily more intelligent than women.
Their brains are bigger
than us in a lot of different
ways. Their brains are bigger.
Right. But we have different roles that we often play better than one another.
Absolutely.
They have a womb for one.
Absolutely.
We don't.
That's right.
And so that means that when they have that child, guess who's there to nurture that child, to feed the child? It's God-given.
That's right.
And so we don't need to view that as an insult to women. We're not saying that a woman couldn't shoot a rifle, but we're saying that we feel an obligation, a God-given obligation, to use the strength that He's given us to defend you. When we open doors, we're not trying to say that means I'm domineering.
Oh, my goodness.
We're simply trying to honor you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Brother Aaron, you hit on something that is so paramount. Today's ways of society are attacking what made us a honorable society.
Yes.
That a man would take off his coat and throw it on the ground to help protect the foot of a woman as she stepped in a puddle. Today,
right.
Or that a man would get wet just to open the door to rush with the umbrella so that the woman did not get wet. That a man would stand up, pull out a chair in a restaurant, and help usher the chair under her to make her comfortable before seating himself. That a man would be honored to order the meal for her. None of these things are reducing her from being a woman. All of these things are promoting our honor and respect for the woman in you.
So
you say that chivalry is dead, not in my house.
And not in my house.
Not in my house.
And let's continue, as the pillar says, as a community. Let's redouble our efforts and our commitment to that and be proud of that value, I say.
Brother, I went to the gas station. It was a couple months ago. It was freezing cold. It was cold.
Cold.
And it was supposed to have been like today, you know, 50-something degrees, and then suddenly, whew, bipolar state. That's what it is. It got seriously cold, and this car drove up, and this young lady gets out her car. Immediately, I go to rush over. Hey, I got it. I look over. There's a young man sitting in the passenger seat.
Oh, gosh.
I said, oh, no, I don't have it. Yo, hey, get out here and gas this up for
her. Sorry, bro.
He said, no, she good. No, she's not good. I said, ma'am, sit in the car and make him get out. And she said, oh, it's okay. I said, oh, I'm done. You see?
Because she's adopted that mentality.
That's right. I don't need you to do that for me. It's not whether or not if you need it. It's honor.
It's honor and value.
I honor you as a woman.
Yes.
That instead of you being out in this cold to pump gas, I'll pump it for you. But then when I see there's a guy in the heat.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, no.
Oh, man. That is bad.
I went back over to my car and finished pumping up my gas and drove off.
It's probably not professional to say this, but I say you should have just taken a marker and write LOSER right on the window. We may have to edit that out, but anyway. Wow. Yeah, no, that's a beautiful thing, isn't it, what we're describing? That's the culture. And I think most women would admit that that's the world in which they would like to live as well.
Absolutely. Right? It doesn't take away their feminism.
No.
It doesn't make them less human. It makes them more honorable.
Yes.
And that's what I think. I think we are quickly becoming a nation of dishonor.
Right.
I just heard, does not the potter have the power over the clay that with the same lump make a vessel of honor and another unto dishonor?
Right.
The same lump. So we were becoming an honorable nation, and now we're quickly becoming a dishonorable nation worldwide. There was a time frame when traveling, if a person heard that you were an American, they were, oh, Mm-hmm. Now they want to hurt you.
So you remember that even?
Absolutely. Wow. Absolutely. I remember having more sky miles than I had driven miles, because every other week I was going back and forth to the Middle East.
Wow.
And now people don't like us. It used to be a time for where people longed to be like us.
Yeah.
Now they don't like us.
Yes.
And it is because one guy said to me, he says, because you're wishy-washy.
He's exactly right.
He says, you do not take a stand. Here in my country, wow, we take a stand. And if you don't take a stand, we kill you. And I'm like, well, that's a bit aggressive.
Yeah.
He says, they don't break the law. In your country, everybody breaks the law. Mm. Here you steal, you lose a hand.
Wow.
And I say, so everybody that I see without a hand stole? He says, you tell me. He says, this law keeps people from chaos. Mm-hmm. And he says, your laws cause chaos.
Wow.
And you call it freedom. I said, well, that's going to be a long discourse, and neither of us have the time for it. And so I got myself out of that one quick. It would have been an international incident.
Yeah, exactly. A few more questions, and we so appreciate your time. Rightly, many Pillar of Citizens are going to be, you know, hearing about what's going on, hearing what their fellow citizen legislators are doing in the state capitol and so on. What should be the response? I know we kind of touched on it really on the early end of the conversation, but what should be the response? Can you give us any specifics, practical advice to these developments?
To those that don't stand for something or fall for anything, is the first thing I say. The second thing I would say is, question, is that what you put them in office for?
Okay.
And if you did not put them in for office for that, then repeal them. You have that power. That's the same beauty of our nation as our Achilles heel. If we don't like what someone's doing, we can take them out of office.
Yes.
Some people get in office knowing this is going to be the only term I got. I'm going to do as much as I can in the short term. And they push a lot of their own agendas. There was a judge in the Ninth Circuit Court that was supposed to recuse himself from the very fact of arguing a case on same-sex. And the reason why he was supposed to recuse himself is because he was in a same-sex relationship.
I remember that instance, yeah.
And so every ruling that judge made is supposed to be, by our law, thrown out. Why? Because he was in the very thing
conflict
that
of interest,
he was, absolutely, the very thing that he was hearing, he was in. So he already had his mind up made on the case, which means he was prejudiced to it. And because of the way that our legal system is written, nothing he ruled should have been valid.
Do our citizens, have we forgotten as a community, Bishop Brand, what you just said, that we still have many, many rights? We can exercise so much of our freedom to effectuate a change. Have we forgotten that?
Brother Aaron, they were just talking just 2 weeks ago that it came across the president's desk and across Congress to reinstate the right to vote. Okay, so the question came up from a person who sent me a note, says, so if they don't reinstate this here, does that mean we can no longer vote?
Oh, I see. Okay.
And I sent back, ha, ha, ha. And she says, why are you laughing? I says, are you worried? Yeah. Well, why are you worried? Because when political things come up, you don't get involved. So why are you worried about the right to vote?
Right.
And she responded, because it's my right. I said, oh, got you. So because it's a right that could be taken from you, now you're interested.
Right.
What the people need to recognize, Brother Aaron, is that there are a lot of rights being taken from them, and they have no idea.
Yes.
If you were to just look at the list of bills that are going before Congress and see what they are trying to do while you are sleeping, you would be appalled.
That's right. That's so true.
But if we don't know, then how do we do? And a lot of times we don't find out until after it's been passed.
Yes, absolutely. So we encourage people to connect, obviously, with our organization. This is what we're trying to
Absolutely.
Do.
Absolutely.
Other like-minded organizations connect somewhere to do exactly what Bishop Brand's talking about. Mm-hmm. And not everyone's called or able to do everything.
Right,
I mean, none
right,
of us can do
right.
that.
Absolutely.
But you can do something.
That's right.
And you can do something more than, as you were talking about, just a vote. I mean, that should be a basic thing, even to honor the blood of the soldiers who gave their lives to exercise our vote.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond that, to just take that next step to educate yourself.
That's right.
And we've got resources that can help people do that. But we can't just sit back and watch this happen.
You see, what separates us from the powerful and the weak, and I'm not speaking physically.
Okay.
What separates us from the powerful and the weak is knowledge. Mm. And the powerful have the knowledge over the weak. Therefore, they use that strong arm against the weak. And when the weak now try to stand up, they say, oh, you don't have no power.
Yes.
So if you sit back
That's right.
and do nothing, you become powerless.
Wow.
If you don't read, if you don't get an understanding, if you don't inquire, if you don't stay informed and stay involved, then it catches you at the dinner table across the news.
Yes.
And you question and you stomp. How did this happen? It happened because you did nothing.
You did nothing. You weren't educated. And your son or your daughter is going to be asking you about it, because I guarantee you, if you've got your head in the sand, you're going to have your young ones, as they're getting older, going, I heard about this. What's going on?
Brother, I think our kids are being more inundated with information than we are.
Seems that way.
Because the children are tapped into technology.
Yes.
So things that we are not seeing and hearing. I mean, there are times when things come across on my cell phone. I don't read this. And then one day I decided to read it. And I'm like, oh my gosh. I got on the phone with my senator just from reading that.
Wow.
And now not everybody has their senators or their congressmen's phone number in their phone, but you do have the local offices of them.
That's right.
They're there in Washington to represent you.
Exactly.
And so they're local offices. And if you sit back thinking that somebody else is going to do it, just like prayer coming out of school, it won't ever happen. It did.
Yeah.
And now metal detectors, free issuance of condoms.
Yes.
Now they're having to give Narcan. Narcan is for people that are high.
Okay.
You use that to bring them off that high. You use that to help pull them to counteract the drug.
Hmm.
And so now we have to have that. The police have to walk around with it. It's being given out in agencies where people who have go to for needles and stuff like that. It's being given out because we know that this is an issue.
Wow.
And so instead of us rectifying the issues, we're trying to find Band-Aids.
Exactly.
To put on.
Instead of addressing the root cause.
That's right. That's
cleaning
right.
the wound out and fixing it, let's just put another Band-Aid on.
Right. And then you get on the church side. Can I qualify two terms, please?
Please.
Religion. Religion is not Pentecostal, Holiness, Baptist, Presbyterian. That's not religion. Religion, if you look into Sir Webster, is man's search for God.
Mm.
That's what religion is. So when people ask me what my religion is, I say, I don't have a religion. They're like, what do you mean you don't have a religion? Everybody has a religion.
You're a bishop.
I don't have a religion. I found God. Mm. Now that I found him, I work on my relationship.
Good.
And so my relationship with God ends up being my faith in form of worship. You hear the difference?
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah.
So what we do is we spend a lot of time focusing on religion, searching for God, instead of relationship with God. And if we get more refound relationships with God, God is not a God that's sitting there ready to stomp on us as soon as we mess up. He's a loving, caring Father who wants us to do the right thing. Because we feel depowered, because we feel irrelevant, because we feel that we do not matter, my voice doesn't matter. 48 million African Americans out of the 328 million. 48 million.
Okay.
What kind of voice do I really have?
Wow.
You see, if you say that my voice is only heard by the 48 million, then I don't have much of a voice. if you say that my dollars are only used with the 48 million, I don't have much of a voice. If you say that my influence and my impact is only with the 48 million, I don't really have as much of an impact when you look that there's over another 190 or 248 million.
Okay.
That has the majority.
Right.
So they can silence me. The beauty of it is that 48 million have more of the 248 million listening to them.
Okay.
Investing into them, supporting them. So now I'm not only 48 million.
Right.
Now I become all not equal, but closer to the equalization
yes.
of the majority. And so if you do nothing, if you say nothing, you're in the corner silent and you're irrelevant. You don't matter.
Man.
But when you speak up, we use the analogy that is the squeaky wheel that gets the grease.
Yeah, right.
When you speak up, thank you, Lord. The Bible says, listen to the unjust judge. Let me deal with this woman's issue, lest she doesn't keep bringing me and pester me to death. God says, yes. listen to the unjust judge.
Right.
The only reason he's responding to her is because he wants to shut her up. All right? So now we, if we want to be heard, if we want society to listen, we got to be squeaky. We got to be annoying. We got to be frustrated. So they say, let me take care of their issue.
Yes. Yes. Wow. Well, and just a quick aside, if I can.
Sure, sure.
Tying into what you just said, if I might, mm-hmm. to the ethnic issues. I'm going to just tie that in.
Oh.
I believe, and I'm interested in your opinion, mm-hmm. that folks within the African-American community, you guys can have a lot to teach, frankly, the Caucasian community about what it means to do what you just said.
Mm-hmm.
Because your community had to do that.
Absolutely.
Your community has a historical, not too many generations ago.
Absolutely.
In your blood, in your culture, it's so on and so forth. And I've always appreciated that.
Mm.
And whenever I interact with an African-American brother like yourself, and so I'm just saying that I think that we can learn a lot, even by, like I was saying before, learning from each other in our different communities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you guys got issues, we got issues, everybody, you know.
That's right, that's right.
But let's learn from each other. And I just honestly see that in the African-American community, there's this sense of, like you were saying, I'm a community leader.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not ashamed to stand up for what I believe.
That's right, that's right.
I'm here, you know. And a lot of times, I could say this because I'm a white boy,
mm-hmm.
a lot of times, often, I'm not speaking for every instance.
Okay.
We tend to be more, I think, subdued and sort of, well, we don't want to take a stand or make a mark or get, be squeaky.
Mm-hmm.
And I would encourage us, we need to take this advice that you're giving us and follow that example.
Well, first of all, the reason for being squeaky is because it's not just affecting us. Okay? When drugs come out of our areas and they're affecting your areas, now you're worried.
Yeah.
Well, you should have been worried all along.
That's right.
You see, because even though the drug might not be in your area, the results are hitting your
area. That's correct.
And so what I tell people, it's news for you. I am great-grandfather, grandfather, father, me.
Wow.
Great-grandfather was one of the last slaves in America.
Your great...
My great-grandfather.
Is that right?
Liberty, South Carolina. Okay?
Wow.
One of the last slaves there. And how did I find that out? I found that out when my grandfather died. Because when my grandfather died, the funeral home that gave me all of the death certificates of my family
okay.
had my great-grandfather's.
Wow.
So I'm Bishop John Brannan, but that's my slave owner's name, Brannan.
Is that right?
You see, so my last name only goes back four generations. My true heritage, I have no idea.
Hmm.
And that's why we have to become more vocal. We have to become more vocal because the only heritage we know is the heritage that was promoted upon us because of our slave owners. So my great-grandfather did not have any education. My grandfather had a third-grade education. My father had an eighth-grade education.
Wow.
I have a doctoral degree.
Wow.
You see, I said, I got to change this. And in order for me to change it, I had to do something different. My great-grandfather was known as being an alcoholic. He had reasons to force him to drink. My grandfather was an alcoholic, and then he stopped drinking when he saw the chaos it was causing his family. My father was an alcoholic, and when I was a four-year-old child, seeing my father push my mother's head through the wall because of whatever was in that brown bottle, I said, I'll never touch that brown bag.
Wow.
So I refused to drink. And even though I refused to drink, and there was no alcohol in my family, my son still became an alcoholic. You see, five generations. If you don't stand up and do something, the chaos will continue. If Martin Luther King, now I must say that it was not only black people, the American Negro, that was in those marches with Martin Luther King. Mm-hmm. There were Caucasians there as well. And that's what gave him more strength.
Sure.
Remember I said the 48 million? Joining on and being accepted by the 248
right.
million, that's what gives us the strength. If we stay silent, we're not an issue, we're not a concern. If you be squeaky,
yes,
they're going to have to respond to your plight. And then the plights that we have are not just plights of black people, they're plights of humans. And if we negate the human aspect of it, then we're saying that we are not worth it. And if you sit down and you tell your child today, your friend Bobby, because his mom and dad is black there, they don't deserve the same rights. A child is going to say, what? A child is going to question that. And the reason why a child questions that is because it doesn't make sense.
And nature, it doesn't even, nature doesn't even make
That's
sense.
That's right.
It doesn't make sense. It's an arbitrary.
My children knew nothing about segregation when they were growing up. But I remember having to go to a black-only bathroom.
It's all right.
I'm a lot older than I look. Almost 60. But I grew up in the South.
Wow.
So I remember having to go to a black-only bathroom. I remember looking at a white-only sink that was very clean, but mine looked very trashy. I remember those things. And society is trying to get us to quickly forget. And if you forget your past, you're bound to repeat it. And so all of these things that we have going on right now, this separation, this fighting and this battling to come up with that Black Lives Matter, Blue Lives Matter, lives matter. And if the person wearing blue doesn't feel that the life of the person who's a different skin color
That's right.
doesn't matter, we become target practice.
And that's a big issue.
It is a big issue. And those who do it need to be charged criminally.
That's right. Absolutely. They're, like you say, I mean, that's a huge issue, what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And it's also a huge issue the other way around, where that person doesn't respect the life and the value of the officer.
That's right. That's right.
Whose duty it is to uphold the law and help the community be safe.
One thing that I don't like is I don't like dirty preachers. I don't like dirty lawyers. I don't like dirty cops. And I don't like dirty cooks.
Me neither.
You see? Because all of them have something to do with my life. All of them have something to do with my future.
Yes.
And if you're going to be in a position of power and you're dirty, you're scaring me.
Yeah.
And so now watch this. It is interesting that there is a requirement that pastors do no wrong. They're still human.
Absolutely.
But you get a pastor make the same mistake that a politician makes. The politician is forgiven. The pastor's crucified.
Wow. I think it's hard to argue with that in what we see actually happen, like you're saying.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so I think that until we stop labeling people, I don't identify as an African-American because I'm an American. For 26 years, my life was on the line for this country. For 26 years, I had to go wherever my commander said go. For 26 years. And to now, after doing that, I am labeled, you're an African American. Right. You're telling me I am not an equal American. Well, when we go to combat, I don't see a separation of Chinese American blood
right.
Black American blood, Hispanic American blood. That's American blood.
That's good.
And what they're trying to do, they're trying to desensitize us to the truth by having all of these culture photos that come up that I understand the message. You're trying to say that we're all American, you just have a different culture. I got it. But that's what the message should be. Even though my culture is this,
right,
I'm American.
That's right. And if you look at history, it's actually very inspiring to see how our two communities in terms of skin color have worked together,
yes, sir,
on so many levels to make this country what it is.
That's the only thing that makes people respond, when we stand together.
Yes.
If it's just me and mine, oh, that's their issue.
Yeah.
But when you stand with me, oh, that must be a serious issue.
Yes. Whoa. Exactly.
You see, I'm the thing about me is that I'm not afraid to speak up. I'm not afraid to speak out. I am not afraid to be heard, because when I was a child, I was very shy. But when God filled me with the Holy Spirit, I became very bold. So now I don't sit back and watch injustice. I will involve myself. Why? Because if it can happen to him, it can happen to me.
Yeah.
And I don't want to wait till it's knocking at my door before I do something. There used to be the time frame when people honored churches. They had respect for churches. You never had to worry about crime coming
right,
to the church.
Vandals and break-ins.
Now I have to have a Glock for my flock, you know, because things have gotten so crazy. You see? And they say, oh, you don't need that. You got God. Well, Peter had two swords.
That's right.
And he asked Jesus, is that enough? Jesus says, what you have is enough. So he wasn't shocked.
That's right.
When Peter pulled out his sword and cut off the ear of the Roman soldier.
Mm-hmm.
Because he knew he was armed.
That's in Luke, isn't it?
That's
Luke
right.
20.
It's in Luke and it's reflected back in John as well.
Yes.
So what we are trying to do is we're trying to use what we think, because it's uncomfortable to us, we think it shouldn't be because it's uncomfortable for us.
Yes.
Well, the only reason you want to disarm me is because you want to silence me.
Hmm.
So I'm armed with this, and I'm armed with the Glock. You just want to silence me. I don't have a Glock because I'm terrified of God.
Yeah.
No. I'm terrified of what people who don't fear God,
yes,
may want to do.
That's right.
And we have that Second Amendment right.
And it gets back to protecting those who are weaker around us.
Absolutely.
And again, from a physical perspective, that may be our wives, our children, or other neighbors who, you know, that's
well, Aaron, once you become a public figure, you're out there. And people want to attack you.
Yes.
People want to silence you because your words might offend them. The Bible says this here when it comes to offense. It says that it is easier to win a hardened city. That means that a very infiltrated city, not infiltrated city, enforced city.
Okay.
Than to win an offended brother.
Right.
Now, that city has strong walls. It is easier to win that than an offended brother. So if we continue to offend each other, we're just making the gap that much larger. And we are offended because you believe that I'm judging you because I don't agree with you.
Yes.
But what you're forgetting is, I have the right to disagree with you.
That's right. We can still be friends even.
That's
and,
right.
And have a different view.
I have individuals that I associate with that are of the homosexual agenda. And they know, don't come to Bishop with that. They know that.
Sure.
Don't come to Bishop with that. And we cool. We talk, we laugh. I don't know, what's that, the hug, you know? You know, but I'm okay with them because they know. I have a wife, and I love the woman.
Yeah.
Okay? I have no desires for something like me.
Mm-hmm.
And so they don't bring that to me, but they bring interesting questions to me.
Sure, yeah.
And some of the interesting questions that they bring, literally one brought a question to me and made me say, oh, wait a minute, I got to think about that one.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him, I went back and I researched and I brought him an answer. Because you have a different sexual agenda, and I don't... agenda, is that the right terminology? Because you have a different sexual preference.
Yeah, you view it differently.
Doesn't make you my enemy.
Yes.
What makes us adversarial with each other is when you try to shut me up,
there
but you want to be very loud.
There you go. Right.
That's what causes a problem. So if that's what you want to do, go ahead. Mm-hmm. Knock yourself out. That's between you and God. I literally say, mm-hmm. that's between you and God. Mm-hmm. Don't involve me in that. I'm required to just speak the truth, live the truth.
That's right.
That's my requirement. And so in my living the truth, I did what Scripture says. Then shall a man leave his father and mother and cleave unto his wife, and they two become one flesh.
Yes.
Same sex can't become one. They can't do it.
Right.
And what we're doing now to change the exterior to make it sound... When I was working in the prison as a mental health counselor, I remember one day in class, this male says to another male inmate, yeah, I'm a female. I got breasts. And I'm like, get old enough, you're going to have them anyway. You know, lose testosterone and get estrogen, you're going to get them breasts. But that didn't make you a woman.
Right.
You see, the thing that makes the woman is the womb. Mm. And
can't
even though
that.
they might change things externally, you can't put a womb in somebody and give it the functionality of a true womb.
That's
you
right.
can't do that. Mm-hmm. So these things that we're doing is really just dividing us even more. We're saying that, well, you're just hating on me. I'm not hating on you.
Right.
What I'm offended by is you're trying to force me
yes.
to accept your way or no way.
Liberty for me, not thee, as they say. It's kind
the baker. It is absolutely yeah. amazing what he had to go through.
Oh, man, it's incredible.
For his civil right. His civil right.
Yeah.
His civil right.
Man.
He had the right
yeah.
to say, I prefer to not do this. It is against my beliefs.
Supreme Court.
Absolutely.
It's unbelievable.
But we have to remember, one of the reasons why it had to go so far is because it was the state
True.
That went after him.
True.
It was the state that tried to force him to do it. You know what they did? They told him, you will bake them a cake. When does the government have
right.
that right,
right
to tell me I will go against my religious That's beliefs?
Right. That's right.
What happened to separation of church and state?
And it gets back to what we're talking about is, how did those rules get put in the first place? And the people that held those positions, it's by the people got elected and then appointed
That's
them.
Right. That's
which
right.
gets back to the whole thing we were saying is
it's that
the
gay
squeaky
manifesto.
Will. It's squeak mm-hmm. out and get involved and don't just, as you're saying, let it happen to you.
That's right.
You've got
to. Brother Aaron, you have to ask yourself this here. If this is where we are today in 2019, where would we be in 2029? I remember back in 1995 reading a magazine that says by the year 2010 we'll have flying cars. And we got close. We got close. We do have cars that are driving themselves. Mm-hmm. We got close.
Yeah.
We did have the hovercraft. We got close. Mm-hmm. But look, that's biblical. The Bible says, behold, the people is one. The language
That's right.
is one.
Mm-hmm.
Let us go now and confound their language, lest they achieve the very imagination of their heart. And the Gay Manifesto had an imagination. And it is doing everything to achieve that imagination because that was a person's proclivity. Mm-hmm. I'm same sex, and I know what I'm going through and hurting. I don't want no one else to go through that. So this is what we're going to do. We're going to put our people in positions of power. We're going to make them lawyers. We're going to make them judges. We're going to make them police officers. We're going to make them council members. We're going to put them in the highest courts in the land mm-hmm. so that no one will be able to stop us.
Yeah.
And that's what we got now.
And they've done a pretty good job if you
Absolutely.
Look at the results.
I say, Brother Aaron, that we need to learn from them. You see, they band together. Mm-hmm. It didn't matter if they were black, white, Hispanic, or whatever. They
banded
together. They brought their
Absolutely.
Resources together because they wanted to push their agenda.
Yes.
And they're doing it. And now we're sitting back asking, how did that happen?
Exactly. So let's make sure we're doing that as well.
Absolutely.
Building the coalition, working together.
And which is why I support the four pillars.
Yeah.
I support it. Because y'all can do, as a group and as a team, what I can't do by myself. Mm-hmm. Even being an international ministry, I still can't do it by myself. I have to deal with cultures in other countries to make sure we don't offend them when we're going in there. But we can do so much more banding together.
Yes.
Support those who have the microphone. And in y'all case, you need dollars. Mm-hmm. Because they've proven that. It takes dollars
to get
you
in
the right position.
For their cause, they put it in there.
They put it in there because that's what they want to do. So if we turn around and we look at it, I was remember asking the inmates, tell me what is the richest place on earth? And they started saying Africa, and, the Middle East. And one guy said, it's America. And I says, well, y'all close. Because all of those are lands. But the richest place in the world is not the diamond mines of Africa, not the oil wells of Saudi Arabia. The richest place on earth is the cemetery. Because in the cemetery, we have untapped potential. We have unborn babies. We have architects, scientists, engineers, doctors, nurses, lawyers, government officials that were not given the opportunity to live out their potential.
Wow.
Because someone said it was inconvenient. And so some of the struggles that we have today is a result of the richest place on earth.
Wow.
And so I said, now do y'all know where the second richest place is? The second richest, I said, in America, the second richest place in America, do you know where that is? And now, because I said the cemetery, they're looking for things.
Yeah.
They're looking for things. And that's one fair. Said, I know, Doc. I know, Doc. And I said, where is it? He said, the prisons. I said, you're right.
Mm.
Because now we have bottled up potential. Wow. Some of you guys are more intelligent than I am. I look at the talents that some of y'all have here.
Yeah, right.
But you're locked up, locked away. And no one will ever be able to see some of these things. So what happens is, yes, it was meant as a methodology of correcting and controlling. Got it.
Yeah.
But for smoking a marijuana joint.
Right. Right, yeah. We want true justice appropriate.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So that gets back to that question again. We are not even equal with justice.
Right.
I literally saw with my own eyes an individual get off because his family had money. I watched that.
Wow.
And I said, wow, if that was my son, he would have been in trouble. Even though I told my son, you ever get in trouble with the law, I ain't marching my house for you. You shouldn't be breaking the law. Now, if he's falsely accused, I do everything in my power.
Yeah.
But if you out there being a knucklehead, see you when you get out.
Yep. And so, what you're saying is, let's call a spade a spade.
Absolutely.
It doesn't matter the ethnicity, the socioeconomic class. Let's call it what it is.
Absolutely.
And make sure, and the communities have to speak up for each other. When you see, like you were saying, when you see a wrong over here, don't just ignore it because it doesn't affect you directly.
It's coming.
It's coming.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly.
It's coming.
Yeah. Bishop Brannon, thank you so very much.
Thank you, Brother Aaron. Thank you for taking the time to even find me important enough to do this.
Oh, it's an honor. It's our honor. It's our honor. I'm Aaron Robertson with the Patriot League, and I'd like to remind you that you can visit our website at thepatriotleague.org to get connected with us, and we're also on Facebook. You also may wish to subscribe to our YouTube channel, and so you'll get notifications on any new videos that we post. And our next spotlight's coming up soon. Again, we thank you so much for joining us at this occasion.
Thank you.
Until then, stay tuned and stand strong for those pillars.